From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Made it to Thursday, a remarkable achievement. So congratulations and thank you for listening. Coming up on the program this morning, about a half hour from now, we're going to have my friend Bradley Jay on from Breitbart News again. I just kind of do a little bit more in-depth on the outcome in Florida on Tuesday night. David Jolly and Byron Donalds going head to head on the November 3rd. General election, if you will. That's mildly intriguing. But just if that means anything nationally, that there were way more Republicans and Democrats in Florida on Tuesday. What is going on there, Coles? It doesn't. I mean, I get it. Florida is probably a red state now, but it showed up more in the category of red state to the extent more than Alabama is, at least for this cycle. But we're going to talk about that, some other things, and then kind of, going forward, if there is anything that maybe is going to happen in Washington, D.C. between now and the general election. Also on the program, April Murray Fogle from 1819 News. And we'll wrap it up in the 11 o'clock hour with Travis Johnson making his return to the program. It's been a little bit, but Travis Johnson for Pathway Church will be with us. So we'll kind of get caught up on things going on here locally. I think it's important. But we'll talk to him in the 11 o'clock hour. In the meantime, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. Kind of national news, economic D-Day against Iran. Is anybody buying it? The next big splash against the Iranians. Well, whatever it is, not working. See, crude oil up to $86 a barrel. We're approaching that $90 a barrel, and it's up 3% for the month. But listen to this. For the year, it's up 36%. It's like all of this talk about, all these issues and what you see online. This is it, guys. The price of gas. There are, bond yield discussions and tariffs and... But it's just this. It's a foreign policy thing that is ties the economy down. Maybe they have some kind of big peace settlement chambered here, and we'll get wind of it later, closer to the election. I don't know, but it's not looking good. You're going to hear me say this over and over again from between now and the day we go vote. And hopefully I'm wrong, but I'm giving you an honest assessment here. And please send me your text telling me that I need to adhere to the Republican talking points, because those amuse me. Please tell me that I need to be as disciplined as the ladies of The View, Joey Behar and Whoopi Goldberg. I always appreciate that feedback. It was deep down in your soul. You know I'm right. But you need to have that bias, that confirmation bias in your life, I guess. Still talking about Barry Moore's gesture to name the I-10 Mobile Bayway Bridge, Donald J. Trump Bridge, and Gateway to the Gulf of America, the double whammy there. That's see how much further that goes. It really isn't caught on. I think it needs, for Congress or more, it needs a little national attention. And if it triggers the left, because it would, I mean, I could see Doug Jones going on MS Now with Nicole Wallace or someone and just being apoplectic about it. Like, you got to start hitting him that on that and get him to take an interest in it, maybe. I don't think it's going to. I don't give this a high likelihood of success. I'm going to say that up front, but it's interesting to talk about. Kind of piggybacking on the Florida discussion, but we're still in the throes of a Democratic Party civil war. The Democrat socialists and the Democrat establishment are at odds, and you know, usually this has been typically the last maybe month and a half or so more of a Fox News, Newsmax kind of phenomenon on the cable news is. But I'm actually starting to see a little more discussion about it. And what's interesting is the far left on these networks is starting to kind of warm up to these DSA guys. Starting to kind of come around on Angie Nixon. And it looks like they're trying to moderate her a little bit, but she said some crazy things in the past. But they're trying to, I guess, soften her subtly and embrace some of the, also, in addition to that, embrace a little bit of that crazy DSA pedigree. Look, I don't think she's going to be governor of Florida. Or, I mean, senator, U.S. senator of Florida. It was an upset. And, you know, Democrats had a pretty good night. The establishment, I mean, Democrat socialists had a good night against the establishment. They don't need to win across the board to say they had a good night. The so-called establishment does, because they've been at it for, you know, 50 years or whatever. So one victory for these guys is one victory too many. And they can't keep putting these fires out with these Graham Platner type candidates who have said crazy things, who have crazy views on foreign policy out of the American mainstream, about public safety, about police, about holidays, I guess. Thanksgiving apparently was a topic in the Wisconsin gubernatorial election. That these things are, you know, they're going to be, the way Republicans are trying to frame it is this is the modern Democratic Party. And the left is trying to cherry pick some of it. Some of it's real, but some of that's just they're just goofing off over a few soy milk lattes, making some gab on a Substack. Nothing to see here. No big deal. Just a podcast. Don't take that seriously. Not a big deal at all. Also, the flock camera discussion it continues. It rages on around every corner of the state. What I kind of wonder, does this catch on like the data centers did? Because that became the populist issue of the Alabama legislature. Now, look, here's the problem, guys. This last session, it was right before an election, and you had a handful of members who had contested primaries. You had, particularly in the House, and I guess the one up in Huntsville with Mo Brooks and Lomax, which turned out not to be a race at all, was a good indicator. But you're not going to have that this session. They're not going to be looking that far ahead to the next election in 2030. They're not going to. I don't think you're going to have this populist issue like you have with the data centers and moratoriums and solar farms. So, Will, the establishment of Montgomery, and this is going to be fascinating to watch because there are a handful of members, Ernie Yarborough, Shane Stringer, guys who are very skeptical of the idea of these cameras that can track your tag number and collect it and compile it and store it somewhere versus the Sheriff's Association or the municipalities or whatever industry lobbyist the flock camera guys put in the hallways of the state, which I assume will be some kind of contract lobbyist that knows Montgomery. Will they make any inroads there? Who will be representing them? I bet there's a lot of money in this. This is something I'm just telling you, will it or won't it be data center mania like it was last session? And by the time we get to the next election cycle, the 2030 session, I mean, we're on to the next big thing in 6 months. 251-343-0106. But no, this is an issue that is all over the state. I see on Yellowhammer, they're talking about Covington County. I got an email this morning about a town hall in Huntsville. This audience is very, very interested in this discussion. How much of this is real life? How much is this something people are thinking about versus it being sort of, you know, inside this bubble of talk radio or social media issue? That's not clear to me either. They probably need to poll it. But, you know, it's polling that we would never be privy to. But we got a lot of big government types in this state. They want to install these. They want to install some kind of camera that tracks speeders in construction zones. And one of the talking points that they had used last session to promote this, and it was very controversial, if you recall, was how much money it would raise. But that's what it gets down to. Like, at what point are we going to install one of these flock cameras alongside some kind of radar detection for speed? And you'll start getting traffic citations in the mail or something. Somebody will try that. 251-343-0106. More on that in a moment. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Brad and Jay coming up here in just a few minutes, so please stick around for that. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the show. Lead it off here with Leah. Reference gas prices. Why does anybody care about the $1 trillion the illegal aliens cost the taxpayers every year? It because you don't realize it. And like government expenditures. I mean, they're taking out of your paycheck. People, you know, the deductions in your check, people don't think about it. This is like it's more psychological when you have to go and you're accustomed to paying a certain amount every time you go fill up your tank. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, 50% more than it was a year ago. You notice that it adds up after a while. That's a real thing, Leo, that most people probably aren't even aware that illegal aliens cost the taxpayers $1 trillion every year. So you're not wrong, but the psychological impact is what you got to take yourself out of, like, what you know or what you think you know versus what people deal with in their everyday life and their understanding and their comprehension of it and how that impacts their behavior, their voting behavior, their buying behavior, etc. And then you kind of understand politics, because politics a lot of times is just kind of understanding the human experience and the reactions that come out of it. And you got to put yourself in other people's shoes and not, you know, like, be myopically focused on, you know, whatever the right wing talking point is. But just in general, like, people who just this stuff is just confusing, boring, or whatever. And they're not thinking about that. Maybe they should. Well, but they're not, okay? And that's why you got to kind of separate yourself from, like, the wish casting and immerse yourself in the reality. And, like, whenever you go out somewhere, Leo, you look around, look at that person on the other side of the pump from you, and kind of wonder, well, what are they thinking? What's their day like? Do they vote? Probably not. But if they do, what are they thinking right now? Maybe they're mad about the price of gas at Buc-ee's, and then they're going to go in. Got a little noise in my ear there. They're at Buc-ee's, and they're going to go in and drop $50 or something on junk. Well, but still, you got to, like, take yourself out of the equation here. And then you have a better understanding of the politics, because you could be for something. And you can, like, have these heartfelt impulses or what, you know, you really believe this is the right way to go, but you got to have others on board with it. Or it's just an idea. It doesn't become a governing philosophy. And a lot of times, Leo, a lot of it is, like, these people in power telling you what's good for you or what they think is good. Or maybe they don't even think it. They don't even believe it themselves, but they want you to message that. And that's, like, the most frustrating thing in politics. Like, just vote for this and tell people that it's good for them and you'll be okay. That's what they want. Daniel Barrymore is a brown noser and needs to make his own path. I support Trump. But let go of Don's coattails. I think a lot of Barry Moore's success. Now, he beat Matt Hart on a perjury charge back during the Hubbard saga. But a lot of his success comes out of that endorsement of Donald Trump in 2015, long before anybody was serious about Donald Trump being president. I was still a permanent Breitbart editor there, and they put me on the ground here in Mobile. They sent me here because I knew it. And I talked to a bunch of these political prognosticators. They, at the time in 2015, didn't even think that Donald Trump would make it on the ballot in 16. And Barrymore gets up there and endorses, and I think that goes a long way for what he has been able to accomplish politically up until this point. And he's about to be a United States Senator. So that's why, Daniel. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. I didn't mean
What I had, but honey, now I
back to the Jeff Poehler Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line if you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. It'll come on the program, April Murray Fogle, in about an hour to Travis Johnson in the 11 o'clock hour, so stick around for that. Joining us now on the line, and I want to get him on again here. Kind of talk a little Florida, a lot of some mild surprises there, and if it means anything at all on the November outlook. But Bradley Jay, my colleague at Breitbart News, joins us on the line. Bradley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Poehler. Doing well. Glad to be with you.
Hey, thank you for copping on this morning. So maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was, and I didn't really have a sense of what it would look like hitting into Tuesday night. Just the number of Republicans versus the number of Democrats that voted in the primary, about 500,000 more, at least in the gubernatorial election. What do you make of that? Is there anything to be, because in Alabama during our May 19th primary, there were way more Democrats who showed up than Republicans. And there were like very interesting, competitive, highly publicized races on the Republican side, just low turnout. Florida, I expected maybe something, maybe if not similar, at least that trend continuing, it didn't continue there at all.
Well, I mean, certainly in Florida, the Republican, if you look at like the amount of registered Republicans, what is it, like a million and a half edge now? I mean, and there's such a difference between Florida and Alabama, whereas Florida, not only numerically, like raw numbers, is it right, becoming more of a Republican state? There are more Republican voters, more Republican elected officials and all that, but they're also becoming, they're getting more conservative governance. Republicans in Florida have much more reason to be excited about being Republicans than Alabama Republicans. And if you look at what Alabama Republicans get in the state legislature, in the congressional delegation, I mean, what there excites you? I mean, if you look at these campaigns that a lot of these Republicans in Alabama are running, I mean, like, who wants to get, I mean, who's motivated to get up and go to the polls for that? I mean, I know I'm not. Whereas DeSantis and the state legislature there, I mean, they're actually doing serious redistricting there. Just look at what DeSantis did in the pandemic compared to what Governor Ivey and the Alabama Republicans did. I mean, there isn't that much of a difference in Alabama between Republicans and Democrats. So, I mean, if you're a Republican, what's motivating you?
Well, the other thing, and I don't know how versed you are on Florida politics, at least in Tallahassee, but I mean, they have some real messy, ugly disagreements in their state legislature. We have some like soap opera kind of stuff that goes on in the Alabama legislature, but not to the degree where you're talking about like criminal indictments and things like that, at least publicly. That they really do have some, like, and Alan Mendenhall and I were talking about this yesterday, that they do have, like, real debates and real fights over things and real disagreements among Republicans. In Alabama, everybody kind of sings from the same hymn and all. It's not polite to criticize and step out of line, and there's retribution for doing so. But the end result is you got this kind of milquetoast social conservatism masking like a lot of cronyism in Alabama. In Florida, I'm sure you still have a lot of the cronyism, but you do have, like you said, some real like more conservative policy issues that go beyond just like social conservatism.
Jeff, I'm not doing my civic duty. I realize that I do everything that I can to avoid following what goes on in the Alabama legislature just because it's so frustrating. I feel like most of the big fights that go on in Montgomery, at least like with the legislature, like little petty personal squabbles, that kind of stuff. It isn't on the policy, which is dictated by the big mules and the Republicans, and honestly, many of the Democrats, at least those that are left, kind of fall in line. I mean, if you look at who's funding the Democrats and the Republicans in Montgomery, it's all the same folks. So, I mean, there's a reason why they're all singing from the same sheet of music, because the same person's printing their hymnals. And it's ridiculous. Alabama deserves much better. And we talk about this till, you know, for years now, but I get asked all the time when I'm in Washington, like, what the heck is wrong with Alabama? They look at our congressional delegation. And those who actually pay attention enough to look at Montgomery have a lot of questions. It's just it seems to me like there's a big disconnect there between the actual electorate of Alabama, which is fairly conservative, with what goes on in Montgomery. Just it don't cotton.
Yeah, it just doesn't track. But beyond that, I mean, beyond the comparisons of Alabama and Florida, what was there anything to be taken away? Like, because there are some Republicans on Wednesday and today who are kind of like, hey, this is a great sign for us. This is a reflection of where we are headed toward November, that we're going to do better than people think. Mike Johnson's been saying that. Obviously, they're trying to brand everybody as Angie Nixon or Francesca Hong or Graham Platner or whatever. But, I mean, maybe that works in the Sunshine State, and I don't know. Is that going to work anywhere else?
If you look at the actual makeup of Democrat voters in Alabama and Florida, it's kind of different. Alabama Democrats overwhelmingly are disproportionately black compared to Florida, I would imagine. But they're probably very certainly there are groups that were trying to exploit what happened with Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, with the ending of unconstitutional gerrymandering to create special affirmative action districts for minorities. That, I'm sure, generated some turnout with black Alabamians in the Democrat primary. Florida is a little bit different. Florida, of course, has a big makeup of folks who, you know, largely Hispanics, many of who are conservative, but I think the sentiment still applies for Republicans and Democrats in Florida. But a bunch of folks who fled Venezuela, who fled Cuba, and there is much more of a distaste for that socialism aspect that, of course, is ascendant inside the Democrat Party nationally right now. Also, Alabama just seems to be so much more insular. Certainly, I mean, if you look at the actual like Democrat establishment in Alabama, which for so long has existed just to enrich itself and so that they can stay atop their little anthill, which is, I mean, all the Democrat Party really is anymore in Alabama. But there's such a difference there. In Montgomery and in Tallahassee with the Democrats and the voters, and I think where they are focused on what's going on nationally, I think that probably contributed a lot to that as well.
What about other states? Like Michigan, for example, does Mike Rogers have a shot here? You start looking at these state-by-state races beyond Florida or Alabama, and is there anything to be taken away from Tuesday? Now, you know, Wyoming and Alaska were kind of weird, but they're always outliers. Do you think is there any reason for even a trace of optimism right now?
There's a reason for a trace. I'm not sure there's reason for much more of a trace. For a long time, Republicans were in really good shape to defy history in November. And it's kind of waning out now. Redistricting certainly helped Republicans in the House. Getting rid of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which, again, unconstitutionally created these affirmative action districts for minority voters. Getting rid of that, of course, helped Republicans. It would have been nice if they could have done more in resolving some of those issues in the census that, of course, accounted for illegals who aren't even eligible to vote in some of the apportionment of congressional seats. That they were unable to get that across the finish line, unfortunately. But Iran, energy prices, I mean, there's so much now. If you listen to, like, John Ossoff is the one who's pushing this, probably the hardest in Washington. Chuck Schumer has really started leaning into this as well. The whole Trump is corrupt narrative. I mean, it's really hard to, if you're Republican, if you're Trump, if his family, it's kind of hard to refute that. I think you might start seeing more Democrats lean into that over the rest. I mean, here we are 75 days away from actual election day. I mean, early voting is going to start even sooner. But I mean, Republicans are kind of running out of levers to pull. I think with these DSA candidates, these, you know, the rise of socialism, that's Republicans' best bet. But I mean, if you look at the way national politics is, those dynamics have evolved since like the Clinton era. I mean, it's not about convincing, you know, it's not about convincing the middle as much as it is appealing to your base. As you, to get back to Michigan, which you mentioned, Michigan is going to be an outlier in the midterms, certainly when you look at the Senate race with Mike Rogers, not just because Michigan is so different. If you look at all the different pockets that it has of Muslims from different parts of the world, which vote differently, they've got a large Middle Eastern population there, a very unique candidate on the Democrat side with El Said and what he's, you know, all of his radical positions, which we don't need to, I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with. So Mike Rogers will be playing a little bit different of a game than most other Republicans. It's tough to say, Jeff. Some polling shows that he's Republicans' best opportunity in those six or seven contested Senate races. But then you see polling that has him down, like this week a poll had him down 7 points to El Said. It's hard to know, but it's going to be such an outlier that I don't think that it will be wholly subject to some of these national trends that are weighing down Republicans in other states.
Well, and I guess ultimately to stave off, like, well, I mean, Republicans go to the White House, but what does it look like? I mean, one of the two chambers at minimum stays in Republican hands. Is that even in the realm of possibilities?
It is increasingly a stretch to think that Republicans hold on to both of them. Jeff, if you look at the Senate map right now, man, like, Democrats have a lot of reason to feel enthusiastic. I mean, North Carolina, Governor Cooper, former Governor Cooper, the Democrat, he's up big. Ossoff is big over Mike Collins in polling right now, just across the river in Georgia. Maybe Mike Rogers can beat El Said. Maybe Collins can hold on. But if you look at all these other states, and yeah, it's polls. It's hard to know, you know, where they are, especially since, you know, this week it came out that, you know, a lot of, you know, there was actually a company that was putting out polls that the polls are totally fake, and they're claiming that it was a social experiment now. But I mean, those polls influenced some elections and influence other polling too. You know how that works. These polling companies, they don't want to have a poll that is an outlier. So they manufacture their polls in a way that is consistent with other polling. It's, I mean, the polling industry is such a mess, but there's so many polls showing that even in super red states right now, these Democrat candidates who may not have a lot of money are still polling pretty well against these incumbent Republicans, or in some cases, not incumbents. That's going to draw a lot of money from Washington that would ordinarily be going to these battleground states that are important to keep and to keep the Senate for Republicans. That's going to draw a lot of money away, especially if you look at how some of these Republicans in those races aren't even campaigning. The Moody in Florida, she's doing okay. She got lucky with the Democrat Socialist winning on the Democrat side. So that was a big relief for Washington. They may not have to prop her up since she hadn't been campaigning hard. But if you look at some of these other states and where Republicans have no business being in contested races, they should win in a landslide. It's just these milquetoast senators who don't campaign hard, who don't do anything to excite the Republicans to actually get out to vote for them. And as a result, I mean, there are tens of millions of dollars that will have to be spent in these races like Nebraska and I mean, gosh, if you look at Ohio, Husted, Senator Husted, the Republican, he's down big to Sherrod Brown right now. Even polls that have Vivek, the Republican nominee for governor, polls that have him neck and neck with the Democrat there, those same polls have Husted down 7. That is a very worrying sign. So it's just, if you look at the polls, if you look at where money is being spent, it just seems like Republicans are trying to grab whatever life raft they can right now. And man, difficult to see Republicans having any better scenario now in the Senate than just holding on to the majority.
Bradley, folks will find you online. Where can they look?
Breitbart.com and on X and Instagram at Bradley AJ.
Bradley, we thank you for your time. Let's do it again soon.
Appreciate you, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We will return. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, all you do is text me. Still come April Murray Fogle. That's in about 45 minutes. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Travis Johnson will be with us. So stick around for that. Let's roll through some text here. Yeah, Mike writes, Jeff, you need to be a good Republican mouthpiece and just whistle past the graveyard of MAGA. It's best to stick to the administration propaganda. Talking points, that's what people want and why Fox News gets boomer ratings. You know, that's just a problem. Try to brace you guys for what is to come here. Like, we're going, it's going to be Democrat cycle. Maybe I'm not quite there with Bradley on the doom and gloom as much. And it's like he did raise a good point about the poll and the polling right now. The polling has been bad. Now that could mean this too. I mean, let's not, you know, the polls could go say a thing and then they could go wildly way more for Democrats. But however you want to gauge them, the polls right now are just not reliable, not trustworthy. So, I mean, these races, these contested races could be anywhere from Republican wins to Democrat blowouts, even more than we were expecting. But my sense of it, and this is just sort of a, you know, taking the temperature and very anecdotal, but it just seems like the gas price stuff is going to haunt Republicans, whether we like it or not. Dan, why not name the new bridge the Donald Trump Bridge? We already have a bridge named after Dolly Parton. That's the whole discussion. That is what they're talking about, naming it after Trump and Barry Moore. It's not officially the Dolly Parton Bridge. The I-65 bridge headed north into Baldwin County. That's not its real name. That's sort of a nickname people have given it. It's the General W.K. Wilson Jr. Bridge. There's a sign when you cross it. But we have been calling it the Dolly Parton Bridge just as a nickname. Let's see here. Ultra Runner. The word on the street is that there's audible groans in the back of the room at our Chamber of Commerce breakfast when Barry Moore said he wanted to name the new bridge after Trump. How conservative is our chamber? We fight DEI education system. We fight for race blind maps. Yet when it comes to commerce, our state still gives a mandated preferential treatment for minority owned businesses. Why is commerce the last vestige of race quota policy? Aren't our woke efforts incoherent? Let me revisit that on the other side, Ultra Runner. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.